dominate your fantasy baseball league with Fantasy Baseball Today, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network. Join Scott White, Chris Towers, and me, Frank Stanfill, every weekday as we recap every player from every game. We'll get you the latest news, waiver wire ads and drops, trades to make, prospect promotions, and everything else you need to take down your league. Follow and listen to Fantasy Baseball Today on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's time for Dining with Dan. Our Bucko Chat with 93.7 The Fan's Pirates pre- and post-game show host Dan Zangrilli.
They found a way to grab a pickaxe, a shovel, and dig even a deeper hole to a rung of hell that is far past Satan himself. I'm not mad. That's impressive.
My God.
That is, what's the awards we get? Marconi? Not Emmys, Marconis? That was incredible.
Marconi award winning, Dan?
Yeah, I thought it was, honest to God.
Is this my opus? You know, we never know in broadcasting what our moment is going to be.
It might have been.
And sometimes you get tagged with things and, you know,
it might have been.
Others hitch stuff to your wagon that you never thought would have occurred. And in this instance, as many times as this has been replayed, I fear the worst.
Yeah, I think it might be, man. That one's not going away,
no.
And neither is this hitting slump. Now, the Pirates finally won a ball game. They're getting, I was going to say good. It's better than good. It's better than great. They're getting, like, practically no hitters every time the guy goes out there, and they're struggling to win games. So let's talk about the offense for a minute, because as Limits just said, they're on the verge of baseball history here. The 69 Angels, and was it the 31 who? Braves?
Braves, yes.
The Boston Braves.
Boston Braves.
The only two teams in baseball history that went 26 straight games without getting to five runs. Is there any hope with the lineup? Is the streak going to be broken today? Is there anybody in AAA? Your thoughts on all that, Dan?
I mean, you would just think that one day that you would run into a pitcher who's having an off day, a good pitcher or a mediocre pitcher, or even a recent call-up from the minor leagues, and you're able to hang a crooked number, kick your feet up, and just kind of enjoy a game and coast the final six, seven innings, whatever it might be. That's not been the case really at any point this year. I also read, you know, we talk about, you know, the four-run plateau. There have been, I believe, 30 games, now 31, and they've played, 49? This will be game number 50 today. 31 games where they've scored less than four runs. So we talk about four runs or less. Well, even getting to the four-run mark, because sometimes when you get four, you can reasonably expect to win if you get good pitching. And the Pirates have been getting pretty good pitching. But it's been less than four runs in 31 of the 49 games played this year.
Wow.
So, I mean, you could take this whichever way that you'd like. And by the way, Joe, I mean, just the last 14 games, the starters have pitched to a 2.12 earned run average, and their record in those 14 games is 4-10. And they're putting up, as a starting staff, Bob Gibson-esque 1968 type of results.
I know, man. It's remarkable.
And
so,
you usually think, right, and I'm sorry to cut you off, you usually say, all right, if you just pitch it well, we'll figure out the rest. And that's how the Pirates were intended to be designed when they won in 13, 14, 15. And that's what the elixir is going to be not only now in the near future, but forevermore until the game changes dynamically with big and small market teams. That's about the only way they're going to be able to win, because I don't ever see a small market team with a lineup of bona fide hitters where they have two or three 25-plus, 35-plus home run guys, like you're seeing the Phillies, like you're seeing the Dodgers, like you're seeing the Yankees run out there. So for any small market team, you're going to have to basically pitch collectively to a 3.5 earned run average and figure out a way to cobble together four runs. And occasionally you'll throw up a crooked number. And the pitching has held up their end of the bargain, but they can't even get to that basic minimum production of four runs consistently, let alone five.
So what does it look like a month from now? Is the hope that Brian Reynolds gets going, that Cruz gets back on track after a blip here, that there's in-house answers, somebody will come up from AAA? I mean, does this lineup look the same in a month?
I mean, ideally, you know, you would have Davis hitting and taking control of his career. Hayes, relative to last year, he's been better, but far short of what you need from a power position, corner infield spot
or any
at third
position,
base.
Yes.
I mean, Canario, maybe there is something in there. I know there's high pedigree. Horowitz has taken some pretty good swings here over the last couple of games. I just don't know enough about him. Haven't seen much about him, but, you know, he's a guy that you squint on FanGraphs, looks okay, and could be an integral part to the offense. We've heard that talked about time and time again. He's supposed to come in here and move the needle in a big way, and then Nick Gonzalez, if they get healthy, this is never going. And then you factor in Cruz, who I think, you know, at 223 yesterday was, what, 0 for 16, 6 of 40 in the month of May.
Yeah.
The Reynolds struggle. So it's a bunch of guys that do have potential that have also underperformed in addition to the lack of depth and personnel organizationally that is the issue here.
Dan Zangrilli, you hear him on Pirates pre and post, sometimes on Saturdays with Bucko Talk, things like that. He's the Pirate guy. Dan, the numbers with Henry Davis are almost breathtaking. He has 40 at-bats and one extra base hit, and he's hitting 150. 130 in April, 176 in May. Have you given up on Henry Davis?
Apparently the organization has, and they're okay with him basically sitting up here at the big league level. Now it's due in large part to injury. Andy Rodriguez comes back. You would assume that he goes back down to AAA, Davis, that is, and he catches on an everyday basis, but his development and the opportunity to fix whatever has been plaguing him has basically been paused because he's up here due in large part to needing a second catcher and Skeens liking to throw to him. But listen, Joey Bart's one of the better offensive catchers in the game. There's a lot to be desired defensively with Bart, but he, for the most part, has been one of, if not the most productive offensive player. He's their cleanup hitter, for crying out loud. So where does Davis slot in? Not a DH because McCutcheon's better than him. Guys are trying to save their jobs. They're trying to win now. They're trying to. So he just doesn't have anywhere to be based on the need at the big league level, which is backup catcher, and he's playing once a week. So I guess no is the answer to the question. I don't give up on him because there's still hopefully something in there, but it doesn't help matters that as time goes on here and he's not developing, he's not getting the at-bats that he needs. It's still, for me, a bit of an incomplete grade, and I don't think the Pirates should give up on him or move on, but, I mean, it appears in some respects that they are because they otherwise could, I think, get a quad-A guy, a journeyman, to be the backup catcher, and then send Davis to AAA if they were truly committed to developing him. So
I mean, we just
that's
never,
a bit of a tell, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. We just never, like, even with Canario, a home run he hit the other night opened my eyes. Like, he's done some things that have opened my eyes. Davis had that two home run game against Ohtani, and we later learned that Ohtani was about, you know, a week or two away from the DL when that happened.
And that was 2 years ago, wasn't it?
Yeah, yes. And
Ohtani was an angel, wasn't he?
Right. He's really done nothing at the plate to open my eyes. Do you think, what about you as someone who looks at hitters and maybe sees something? Could he be somebody else's Joey Bart? Does he just need to change his scenery? Or is there simply nothing there at the plate?
I mean, there's obviously, a hit tool, but he's lacking an approach. He's the only hitter that has come through PNC Park over the 25 years that can stand in the batter's box at PNC Park and hit a ball onto East Ohio Street.
Yeah.
Think of where East Ohio Street is relative to home plate. That's how much he pulls the ball. He considers the left field foul pole as center field.
That's
hitting the way he pulls off of baseballs, the way that he just completely sells out, how far out in front he is just trying to grip it, rip it, and hit the ball out of the ballpark. There have been some two-strike approaches show itself at times, but far too infrequently. I think it's all approach-based, and I don't know if that's the Pirates driving that. I don't know if that's Davis and his internal camp driving that. But it obviously needs to change because when he does square up a baseball, there is plenty of ability. And he's an athletic guy with a good arm. He's improved he's improved leaps and bounds, and he's proven me completely wrong as to being able to catch at this level. So kudos there. But I'm not giving up on him. I wouldn't, because there's 1-1 pedigree somehow, some way, whether he should have been the 1-1 pick, there's pedigree there. And I don't think that the sample size is large enough, but it is concerning how they've paused the development, how he hasn't been able to, with all of this time this year, been able to get any routine playing time to lengthen that sample size so you have more data to make a determination, and of course, try to, whatever you can, do to get value out of him.
Limits, I wouldn't even dream of leaving you out of this conversation.
Joe, I appreciate it. And Dan, I wonder, they've done it with other players. Why not even have the consideration? Maybe they did, but we haven't seen it in batting practice or anything, in warm-ups, whatever, to move Bart to first base and even give him some run there. I think that you have to give Henry Davis, like you're saying, a 2-3 month sample size. What do you have to lose at this point? Your record is already not going to get you close to the playoffs. See what you have with Henry Davis. We're ultimately at the end of this year. You cut ties if you know at this point.
So I agree with Bart at first base. I would have moved him there this past offseason. But you obviously, I mean, I don't know. They do take random people, whether it's Manuel Valdez or, gosh, who's the new guy?
And Valdez, they
Solak
just came out.
Yeah, Solak. They throw him at first base. So, yes, to answer your question, I would move Bart to first base. Do I do that in the middle of the year? I'm not sure. Bart's throwing out 12% of runners. He's not a big catch-and-throw guy, a number of pass balls. I think he's cost pitchers a number of strikes. I don't like the mitt behind home plate. I'm sure he calls a great game. The arm, I think, is decent enough, but he's a bigger target over there. Yes, I like him at first base. Do you do all of that abruptly midway through the year? Do you disrupt what you have going on offensively with Bart by taking on a new position? Now may not be the time and place, but however you get Davis some more at-bats, again, even if that is bringing in or acquiring for relatively nothing an additional catcher, a Jason DeLay type, and have him serve as the backup or even the primary guy, let Davis go back down to AAA to get at-bats.
Made sense because Horwitz was out for the first whole month and just came back. So that would have been the time to put Bart there.
Well, no, winter, spring training, you take on a new position, you do that kind of stuff, I think, in February.
But in an unrelated note, Dan, do you remember when Chris Snyder played for the Diamondbacks and was put on the DL with what was termed a broken testicle?
This was 20-some-odd years ago, wasn't it?
It was, yes.
And there
we
is.
We were just marveling about it the other day because we didn't know they broke. Sprained, yes. Couldn't they just list it as a groin injury?
Why
a broken testicle?
Why is this buried so deep in your memory banks that you're able to recall it some 20 years after the
fact?
Well,
because it came up the other day because Chris Snyder's name came up as part of some very bad Pirates teams.
Mm.
And was just curious if you remembered that. And why not just go with the euphemism there, right?
Broken balls.
That's what we're all feeling these days. Limits, your question was so insightful. I want you to come back with another one.
Thank you. So now, well, I do want to throw out a newser for you guys because Todd Tomczyk said, Joe, you're going to be upset that Emmanuel Valdez underwent surgery on his left shoulder.
I don't like to hear that.
He is out for the whole year, which will be, he's out for 6 months, which means he's going to be out for the year. But what you'll... Well, yeah, obviously you're not going to like to hear that, but we're not going to be able to talk about Valdez anymore.
Well, we haven't even talked about Jared Jones.
Yeah.
You heard the news there, right?
Is that today's news?
Yeah, he's getting elbow surgery
today.
They admitted it today?
Yeah.
When did that happen?
It just came down right before the game. Jared Jones will undergo surgery to repair the injury in his right elbow. Pirates Senior Director of Sports Medicine, Todd Tomczyk, Noah Hiles put it out there. So this is Tommy John, right?
Well,
without saying Tommy John?
They haven't specified specifically, so I don't know what type. I think, you know, he's going to get surgery. To me, and without being at that press conference personally, because there's so much question mark surrounding it, you know, they tried to avoid it. Is there a complete tear? I think that there's maybe some 50-50 stuff going on here, and maybe they get in there. And once they're in there, they see what it is, and that depends on where they go, kind of audible at the line of scrimmage kind of surgery, whether it's a complete TJ or something that is maybe a little bit less. I mean, if it's complete TJ, conceivably, Jared Jones may never throw another pitch for the Pirates. If you think about it, he's going to miss this year, 25. He's going to miss 26 if it's complete TJ.
Yeah.
27, we might not have baseball. We could be headed for a lockout, okay? And so that's 3 years, and that'll be essentially, again, 26.
Does this contract tick all those years?
Oh, of course. This happened.
Even the lockout?
This happened on the major league. Well, that depends on what is negotiated during the lockout. And typically players during these sort of things, they want that year of service time. So whatever concessions they're going to give, the owners typically have to give back that year of service time because the individuals, the union members, the players, they want that year of service time. So that's always.
Man.
So think about it. I mean, he throws in 24. That's year one. He was up the entire season.
Yep.
Got hurt. Was on the injured list. He was optioned for a time, but it was never, I believe, when he was hurt. He basically gets full year's service time. He misses all of 25. Going to miss all of 26. Let's just say, for argument's sake, that they're granted that year of service time, and if we don't even play baseball in 27, so there's 4 years. He's going into five, depending on how we come out of that CBA, if 0-6 and player control is still even a thing, or if that's blown up and fired into the sun, which I think is going to be a big part of the negotiations. But I think it's, without trying to be an alarmist here, if he has to indeed get that full reconstructive surgery, he may go 3 years in between throwing major league pitches.
Wow. I mean, that was, it sounds like John Parrotto's report the other day is looking more correct. You know, it's, what a shame. Because the little bit we saw this guy at the top of his game, you couldn't help but have, you know, visions of him and Skeens and Chandler at the top of your rotation. But it's becoming like having visions of...
Dominate your fantasy baseball league with Fantasy Baseball Today, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network. Join Scott White, Chris Towers, and me, Frank Stanfill, every weekday as we recap every player from every game. We'll get you the latest news, waiver wire ads and drops, trades to make, prospect promotions, and everything else you need to take down your league. Follow and listen to Fantasy Baseball Today on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Of Garrett Cole and Tyone and Glasnow, you know, or the dream outfield of Polanco, McCutchen, and Marte. These things we think about and dream about as Pirate fans just don't seem to come to fruition.
I mean, it's the most scorned fan base, unlucky fan base in all of sports, perhaps in history. I don't think that's hyperbolic in any way, shape, or form, considering what they've endured, considering the results. Which so many things have to go against you. You have to have your own missteps. You have to be restricted budgetarily. And you also have to have unfathomable, unimaginable, just luck that makes the curse of the Bambino in Boston seem like a mere flesh wound.
I mean, I hate to laugh, but again, the only thing we can do to prevent crying sometimes is laughing.
Mm-hmm. And here we
so-
are.
What was I going to ask about? Oh, Chandler. Does the team being this bad, do you think, affect when they'll recall or if they'll recall Chandler?
I think there's still, from what I understand and what I'm hearing, some breaking ball refinement stuff. I don't quite understand what they're doing with the workload. I think, you know, they're taking innings off the front end to be able to put them on the back end. So he's able to go in September with really out any restrictions, because when we're talking an additional month or finishing through September, that's almost 30 to 35 innings, ideally, if you're going 5, 6, maybe even 7 innings, doing so, you know, 4 or 5 times, 6 times maybe even throughout the course of a month. They're going to bring up Burrows. He's going to start tomorrow. Majinski goes down to AAA, which is an interesting move in and of itself. But I thought it would be Chandler last weekend against Atlanta. I thought Chandler would come up this weekend against Milwaukee. I'm hearing that's not going to be the case. How much more refinement is needed? What other boxes need checked? I don't know. I mean, the Pirates have gone against the grain, and they have fired the Super 2 argument into the sun with some other moves they made, Jones being one of them, Skeens being another. So I don't think that that's necessarily on the table or relevant here, why that wouldn't be applicable to those guys, and they'd be so hell-bent on it with Chandler here. So what I'm hearing is more breaking ball stuff to be able to flip the lineup over sufficiently.
So this question comes to mind too, and it's honestly the way I feel, and I feel like it's an outlier opinion, and I want to see if you agree or not, that even in spite of this injury, Ben Cherington and the Pirates, through luck, through being bad, and through some good moves, they've gotten the hard part right, which is starting pitching. And that leads me to the opinion of, If you have the franchise quarterback, so to speak, starting pitching, a star leading your rotation, and then two or three, or who knows, maybe four other guys who are really good, that's the hard part. So you, by definition, you can't be that far away if you have the hard part taken care of. Find a couple of hitters, cobble together a bullpen, and at least be in the mix for a wild card. Your thoughts?
That's, I think, the answer to the question of those who wonder why a move was made at manager and not more substantial baseball operations move. That tug of war that you're talking about here, put yourself in the owner's shoes. He's probably thinking the exact same thing. He's watching the pitching, which, again, your business model in this game is get the pitching, figure out the rest. And when we talk about, you know, the pie chart, how much of that is pitching success of a franchise, it's probably more than half of it. To be able to have great depth there, to have internal options, controllable guys, figure out a way to cobble together that four-run mark, right? Those 5 runs. And if you've done the hard part, do you want to reset your baseball operations philosophy as imperfect as it is, as many adjustments that need to be made to it? That's, I think, and you can argue that it's an existential question for Bob Nutting. That's what he's wrestling with at the moment. How does he not undo, which, objectively speaking here, say what you want about the regime, some tangible progress and the hard work that's been done and put in place, how do you take that next step without undoing it all? Is that a regime change? Possibly.
Do you think firing Ben Cherington would be undoing it all and would precipitate another 5-year plan? I don't. I want a hired gun like Jim Rutherford to come in here and put the final touches on this thing.
Yeah, and
go
and
make some deals and make me a winner.
And I think that finding that person is maybe a little harder in baseball than it is in other sports. Because think about how all the GMs think, act, speak. I'm watching the Red Sox documentary on Netflix just not to see what's going on behind the scenes of the clubhouse. I want to hear how they think, they talk, they speak. They're just as, you don't want to say as bad as the Pirate, but they all think that way. They all act like this. This is all the Harvard, MIT guys with the same philosophical bent. So as you're fishing for a pool of candidates to run your baseball operations department, you keep turning the pages over. It's the same thing, the same thing, the same thing. All 30 organizations are doing it.
Well, find somebody. Somebody's right. Doing something out of the box.
Zarenzik,
find him.
Zarenzik's up there golfing at Truesdale. I don't know. I mean,
get somebody to find a couple hitters. Make a big trade.
Right?
Do something.
Sure.
The hard part is done. They have starting pitching.
Amen. Amen.
But if you can't do the other part, it's useless.
Typically, you've been able to do that, but for some reason now they can't. The pitching isn't enough. A 212 earned run average and you're 4-10 over 14 games. It is remarkable. It is remarkable how they've been able to waste all this starting pitching. You think they'd be at least 500 with it, right?
Of course. I mean, it's such an indictment of the GM. Thank you, Dan.
Thank you.
What a nice man he's become, huh, Lemon?
Could I ask Dan one more quick question?
I mean, of course you can. Would I prevent you from doing that? Dan's on his way out the door. He has other things to do, but let's bring him back.
Dan, very quick. You mentioned about the lockout and the potential that Jones might not even pitch in 27. How likely or possible do you think it is that there is a significant amount of baseball games that are impacted by the upcoming lockout that will happen?
I would say the whole year. I mean, because if it wasn't, you would be, Jones would pitch in 27 if there were baseball. So I'm saying he would not pitch in 27 under the pretense that the whole season would be gone.
The whole year in
baseball.
Pursuit of a salary cap? Would that be the main issue?
I don't know all of the intricacies, but I understand that, you know, there was the intent to really dig their heels in the last CBA, but of course it coincided right in the middle of a global pandemic, and this is just my opinion here, I don't think owners wanted blood on their hands of, you know, having the billionaires, millionaires argument while everybody is struggling and the world is in the throes of a global pandemic. Think about when it was going on last time, right in the middle of March, April, May of 2020. So you had the pause and then you had the labor disruptions as well in 2020. If you go, I know we all want to forget that period of time, but that's what was going on then. And I think that, and based on also what Nutting said to Mackey in the PG, Nutting also made some points as to why he doesn't want to sell the team, is he feels compelled to be a loud voice in the room who's been at the helm for 20 years. In other words, maybe he has some juice. This is just me trying to read through the transcript without having the opportunity to speak to him
myself.
No,
that's exactly what he said. Right. I'm not sure why we should believe him, but that's what he said.
So, yeah, and I mean, hearing some murmurings of just for those around the game, I think everybody is kind of battening down the hatches and bracing for a pretty intense 2027. And
which is an amazing thing to me, Dan, considering that they've had relative labor peace, relative, and unprecedented prosperity. Free agent contracts, media contracts, television contracts, well, even television ratings are and attendance are back to pre-pandemic levels.
Well, the last one isn't the case anymore, and I think they all need to navigate in a much different way with a market correction in that last part, which was such a gravy train that has come to a screeching halt.
Which gravy train?
The television, the broadcast rights deals. All of the networks have gone bankrupt. ESPN is punting baseball into the sun. They are far less lucrative, and that has been a huge drop in revenue.
And yet they're setting baseball records in revenues.
I mean, in the new era, I think it's way too early. It's only been about a year, year and a half or so. So I don't necessarily think that's accurate right at the moment. But in some other revenue stream, sure, they're doing well. I don't want to sit here and come on and say, like, you know, the sport is dying. There's many trajectories that are positive, but there's a big piece that because of all of the bankruptcies have...
Yeah, I hear that with local television, but Forbes headline, MLB revenues hit record $12.1 billion in 2024.
Right. Are those,
I guess all I'm saying is, it's while there are issues to be solved, we all agree on that with baseball, I don't think it's nearly as bad as some people want to paint it out to be, and I don't see a reason to go dark for a year. $12.1 billion in revenues in 2024. A record.
Well, there's just way too much economic disparity. The way that you see New York's and especially LA's and how they're gaming the system with deferred money and things of that nature, that, you know, they're just building these juggernauts. There's this, you know, 5 to 10% of elitists and everybody else is getting left in the dust. And while there are loopholes to kind of exploit, you can't play Moneyball anymore. You can't 13, 14, 15 teams like the Pirates did by just valuing players differently because everybody values players the same way. There's no old Hawaiian shirt wearing, back slapping, straw hat wearing general manager where you as the MIT guy can come in and steal players and get your Francisco Lirianos, your AJ Burnett's, your Jay Happ's, all of that stuff. Because you're valuing them differently. You're ahead of the curve. Well, guess what? The overspend 6, 7, 10 years ago was pulling Andrew Friedman from Tampa Bay to Los Angeles and giving that MIT mind $300 million to work with. Game over.
Sure, but I do see teams like the Detroit Tigers and even, you know, the Brewers still win divisions.
There's always going to be exceptions, no
Cleveland.
Doubt. But I think when you want to be as... The NFL is so loved because of the great parity in the game, and it's so valuable because of the great parity in the game, and that must-watch, must-listen drama that is the NFL every single night. I think that's where the game is looking to get to, so you don't have entire markets, essentially half of your markets. That's why they tried one of the patchworks is to, well, let 40% of the league into the postseason, expand the playoffs. That's a patchwork deal. No, how do we get all 30 or maybe even 35 teams on board?
Let's hope Bob Nutting is at the front of the line there because he's now on the record as saying he will be, and in fact, saying that's the, quote, biggest reason he owns the Pittsburgh Pirates. So I'll be eager to see it.
He's got to start tying himself to train tracks and handcuffing himself to flagpoles for sure.
Dominate your fantasy baseball league with Fantasy Baseball Today, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network. Join Scott White, Chris Towers, and me, Frank Stample, every weekday as we recap every player from every game. We'll get you the latest news, waiver wire ads and drops, trades to make, prospect promotions, and everything else you need to take down your league. Follow and listen to Fantasy Baseball Today on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
limits? Do we have the big boy?
Yeah, I just spoke with the big boy on the phone. He said that he is going to jump on the video feed, and he should be on in literally a matter of 5 seconds. But if it's not 5 seconds, don't hold me to it.
1,000, 2,000, 3,000, 4,000, 5,000. He's not on.
No, he's not there.
You were wrong.
That's why I said don't hold me to it.
Check out the first episode of Breaking Bread, presented by Saloni's Italian Bread. Hannah Mears sits down for lunch with Malzi, and the two talk about Hannah's career, life on the road, and more. Breaking Bread is on the 93.7 The Fan YouTube channel. Plus, find out who Hannah thinks is the funniest athlete she has encountered. Available only on Saloni's Instagram page. Fan text line brought to you by Edgar Snyder and Associates, a personal injury law firm where they always say there's never a fee unless we get money for you. And fan Twitter brought to you by South Hills Kia Peters Township. Visit them at southhillskia.net. Who's the funniest athlete I have encountered, you might ask, Limits?
That's a great question.
Although you didn't. Probably no, I didn't. Yager had a great sense of humor. He was a little bit mercurial, to put it mildly, but had a great sense of humor. Darius Kasparaitis was laugh out loud, hilarious every day. Like that, yes. Without the highs and lows of Yager. Mm. I'm trying to think in the Steelers locker room. Funniest. Oh, well, Al.
Villanueva.
Al was the single funniest human I've ever encountered.
Do you think the big boy agrees?
I don't know. Big big boy. I love the hat. TJ. I have a friend on TJ Softball. Did you know that?
Big game coming up, huh? Big playoff game coming up.
Joe Bracco. His daughter, Addie Bracco. She's the shortstop. At least she was the last I checked. And I like it when they win, when she wins. You go to their softball games?
No. Back in the day, I did when I used to work for the McKeesport Daily News.
Well, why don't you support them still if you wear a TJ hat and they're in a lot of big games? Go out to a game and support them, will you?
They're in the playoffs now, so they're probably playing like in Robinson or somewhere like that. That's too far for me.
Robinson Town Center has a good feed store. You can kill two birds with one stone. Mm, right, Limits? Mm.
Thanks to the good feed store.
How are you, big boy? Good? You doing well?
I'm doing spectacular. Where's Robert at today?
They don't call him part-time pomp for nothing. He's off. He'll be in tomorrow. We just had, for some reason, because Malzi is sitting down with Hannah Mears on the first episode of Breaking Bread. She's going to tell Malzi the funniest athlete she's ever encountered. My choice for my career is Big Al. How about you? Who's the funniest athlete you ever encountered? He's up there, isn't he?
It depends. Depends on what day you would get him. You get him on a day where CNN is in town and want to talk about his hand over his heart. He's not very pleasant during those days, but I thought Pouncey was pretty funny. Right now, I think it would have to be, he's a funny guy. It's Christian Kuntz.
Is he?
Long snapper.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, he's a funny dude.
Ike was a funny guy. Casey Hampton was a funny guy.
Oh, Casey Hampton, probably. You probably hit that on the head. I mean, Casey Hampton was just hilarious. Just to deal with. I mean, one of my favorite stories of all time with Casey Hampton was, I think it was Benzie. If it's not, it's going to be Benzie for this particular story. He was asking one long-winded question, and Casey interrupted him and said, "Man, my job's not that hard. I go left or I go right."
That's great.
I just thought that was kind of funny.
You know who's a really underrated funny guy? When I covered Pitt basketball, Blake Hinson is hilarious.
He was great on the air.
Really great.
When he'd come on with us. Do you have Benzie from the top rope with the George Pickens question for Cabali? I think he would enjoy that. The season's basically over. Tomlin thinks he's getting out of there. The PR people think they're getting out of there without any reference to George Pickens being late to a game because the news had just broke. And in comes Benzie with literally the last question of the year.
Mike, is there any accuracy to the report that Pickens was late on Christmas Day to the game against the Chiefs?
Man, that's a few days back. I really don't know I have the answer to that, to be quite honest with you. I got a lot going on in pregame. I can't answer that definitively.
No, I don't remember if my most talented player was late to the big game. You like that, Cabali? I like Benzie there.
It was either a yes or a no. Another one was the COVID year during the old USC interested in hiring him. We're all sitting waiting on who's going to ask us. We all basically go at the same time, but Benzie, of course, shouts us down and asks about the USC job, and that was the infamous not a booster having big enough checkbook.
I love that quote.
Benzie from the top rope.
Yeah. Benzie's had he's had quite a career with that. Who do you think is Tomlin? I don't want to say most hated, but the person Tomlin, when they were in their primes of asking questions, would least like to hear from at a news conference. And I'll give you some candidates. Benzie, right. Jory Rand, David Todd, Aditi, or other?
I'd probably say other.
Who would it be?
Oh, the great Jacob Klinger. I think he despised him. He absolutely despised
him. Do you remember him limits?
Not well enough, apparently.
Do you remember him at all?
I know the name, yeah.
Mm.
No, stop yeah. it.
Borderline Mulsey. No. Borderline Mulsey. I know the name. Or who did he write for?
The Trib.
Wrong. See, we've
was
been
the
trying.
Nick Faribault before Nick Faribault.
Exactly. He wrote out in for Harrisburg Patriot News, I think, or Altoona, didn't he?
Yeah, put it this way. He left such a lasting impression. I think they went 10 years without covering the Steelers, the Harrisburg Patriot News.
Oh, wow.
Before they finally jumped back in because of Klinger.
I liked Klinger.
But beyond Klinger, I would say probably David Todd.
Yeah.
Because it could, no matter what it was, the first question to David Todd was, well, you know, the clock management. I'm like, no matter what it was, first question was clock management.
It was incredible. And it was usually analytics based, which I never heard Tomlin. That drives him nuts. Of course, he himself, for the first time I've ever heard, used analytics to explain the benching, non-benching of George Pickens for the Cowboys game this year. Remember that? It was about snap management and such things.
Load management. That load man, he must have got all of his energy back just after one game where he had to have his load managed.
Who do you think has a better year, big boy, George Pickens or DK Metcalf?
There's going to be times where George Pickens is going to make some big plays and some big games. You're going to question why they made the deal, but I think ultimately it will be Metcalf. It's just a matter of time before something happens in Dallas. Who knows when that would be, but at some point, and I love how Dallas, their coach, what's his name now? I forget now. Shotzi, right?
Schottenheimer. Yeah.
Talking how great of a individual he is. Yeah, that's
limits. You should have known that right off the bat.
I did, but I didn't want you to.
Oh my God!
Because I knew it.
Oh boy,
Brian Schottenheimer is their coach.
If you knew it right away, why didn't you jump in?
Because I didn't want to insult you because you didn't know it.
Wait a second.
I'm kind of confused here. Are you saying that Bechtold is doing a Mulsey as in never admit that he's wrong?
Yes. It's called, it's a version of early onset Mulsey disease. An entire region is rooting for
Austin.
He's
taking it way too far, Kamali.
And the nature of the disease is, please don't let me look like I don't know something. And we all have it to a certain degree. Like if someone asks you, Mark, did you see Almost Famous, the movie? And if you didn't see it, I think we all have an inclination to still say yes, but when it reaches disturbing proportions, that's when you may have a touch of Mulsey disease, and that's what poor Austin's been battling.
Kabali, I think that Joe is approaching pony levels of over-exaggeration now. I think he's getting there.
One day you'll get to my over-exaggeration, that range. I think I lead that list.
Poor little limits. Do you feel bad for him?
I never feel bad for Austin.
Because he's rich?
Tell me where the stack of money is, because I haven't found it yet.
He's Baldwin royalty.
He is Baldwin royalty, mostly because of wiffle ball right now.
He walks into Baldwin High School and they're like, oh my goodness, there's Austin Bechtold.
A lot of people do know you
they
over there, limits.
That, yeah.
Because like some of my daughter's friends are from Baldwin. I'll ask one of them randomly and they know you because of the documentaries that you've produced on Baldwin basketball and such.
The high school football stuff.
Yes.
It's pretty cool.
You're very well known there. All right, big boy. I forgot what I was going to ask you next because we got caught up in the limits drama. TJ Watt was actually on my mind.
Yeah.
And we'll get to that at the top of the hour. First, what do you think of the idea of NFL players
Look who's here.
Playing
it's
flag?
Malzy.
It's Malzy himself.
Hold on. Hello. Hello. Salutations here.
Say hello to the big boy.
I can't hear you, Kabali, but I'm sure you're offering many salutations. Hi. So I was told, and I'm just going to kind of riff here, I was told that Austin once again failed a challenge, did not know who Jacob Klinger wrote for, kind of pulled the,
I think I've heard the,
I I'd like to bestow on him, he had a Malzy moment. I have a hat, actually, I've been keeping for just such an occasion. I'll put it up to the video here. It's General Know-It-All. I'm going to bestow this on Austin. He's a five-star General Know-It-All, Austin. Hold on, I'm going to bring it into you, big guy.
This is actually touching that it's come full circle to the point where Malzy himself is reaching out to you in a time of need. Limits.
I appreciate him for doing that.
Yeah.
It's a flat bill hat, too, so it fits right in with Austin.
Right. I'm crying now, actually. Look at that.
It fits perfectly. General I'll have to come to the video and show it off.
Goodbye,
Joe. Goodbye, Kabali.
Kabali, I'm in tears now. I can't believe that this has happened.
The problem is people on YouTube can't see
that.
There we
go. Limits, go ahead. There he is.
There you go.
Go to YouTube to check it out.
What a General Know-It-All hat. You like that?
What a beautiful.
Like he looks like the skipper from Gilligan's Island.
What a beautiful. What a beautiful gesture by Malzy.
Oh, so kind
it
of
really
him.
Really was.
Is it kind or
black
insulting?
Gold?
A little bit of both. What? Mark?
It's black and gold. It fits him perfectly.
It is.
Looks great.
It's a five-star general, too. You notice that, Joe?
That means it's the disease must have gotten really bad if it's five stars.
I did notice that. What do you think of TJ Watt and his contract situation? Is this going to get ugly? Are we headed for a hole? What's going to happen?
Well, I don't think it's going to get ugly. I think it's just going to work its way out. If it's a hold in, how are we going to really know, to be honest with you? Because he'll go through, he'll be at OTAs. I mean, he'll just go through individuals like he did. And does he really need training camp? Does he really need OTAs or mini camp? No, the last time he did his infamous hold-in, which he did a lot of, if not all of the individual work before sitting out teamwork, he finished with 22 sacks. As long as it's done before September 6th is the only thing I'm worried about. But I think that will be done. It's just a matter of, you know, if we're going to give him 3 for $120 or what. And that's basically what it's going to come down to.
All right, top of the hour. I have other Steeler questions. Needless to say, some of them revolve around quarterback. If you agree with the win difference that Ben put forth between Aaron Rodgers.
Dominate your fantasy baseball league with Fantasy Baseball Today, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network. Join Scott White, Chris Towers, and me, Frank Stanfill, every weekday as we recap every player from every game. We'll get you the latest news, waiver wire ads and drops, trades to make, prospect promotions, and everything else you need to take down your league. Follow and listen to Fantasy Baseball Today on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.